on record in just a moment and open up the video broadcast. Again, if anyone has a question or a comment tonight, please text my cell phone at 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. We'd love to have you participate with us this evening. It's always nice to know when we have someone out there listening and asking questions, and then I can address those issues as they come up. Okay, we're going to go ahead and start the broadcast. Okay, let's see if it's telling us if we can actually get this going. There we go. I'm giving you a play-by-play on the broadcast. And I think we're live. And we're recording. Well, welcome to our Tuesday night celebration of life. Ramon and I were talking earlier today about today's topic, and we both smiled. Because there are times when this one takes a little extra effort, and that's one of the reasons why it's so important that we discuss it this evening. This is quality number 5, finding joy in the journey. This is in the daily moments of our lives. We have an opportunity every week to get together, and we'd like to welcome those who are visiting us with us for the first time. Welcome to this call. You can access it either on video, live video on Ustream, or on the telephone. Thank you all for being with us this evening. Welcome to any visitors who are with us for the first time. We'd like to invite you to come back with us on a regular basis. Each week we take on one of the qualities of an intentional creator. We start off with the art of connection, stepping into someone's world and taking down walls of resistance. And then we move to mental creation. How can we use our vivid visualization to receive inspired ideas, impressions, and solutions to problems that will ignite our passion and drive our focus and discipline and effort and action. And then we go to quality number 3, which is physical creation, where we learn to bring that passion to our work. And as we discussed last week, no one gets to skip the work of creation. And one of the tragedies, if there is one, in the self-improvement world, is that quite often we get attached to the process of self-improvement, believing that reading the book is the work of creation, or listening to the CD, or watching the DVD, or going to a seminar, or even coming to this coaching program. All of these elements are here to drive you to the work of it, to the actual creation of it, passion-driven, working without counting the costs, finding joy in that process, letting go of the need to be right and resistance and resentments and fear and anger, being real and genuine and authentic and truly enjoying the work of life. I wrote this weekend that in fact many of the things that we want to become as a person, we talk about becoming and then doing and then having, as we talk about this process of becoming, there are just so many things we cannot become until we're actually in the doing of the activity. Ramona and I the other evening watched a docudrama about the 2005 Chicago Marathon. And I've shared with you a few times that Ramona has run a marathon, and I still remember her crossing the finish line, coming up to the fence, and putting her fingers through that fence and just staring into one another's eyes and feeling the joy of her accomplishment. You can read books about hitting the wall. You can watch videos about hitting the wall. But until you're in mile 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, and then point 2, you will never know what it feels like to really run a marathon. In fact, in preparation, most training circuits, the longest run is 20 miles in preparation. So those last 6.2 probably have never been run unless you run a previous marathon. This is a great thing to know, that in life, the very thing we're resisting is where the joy is. The joy comes in the creation. The joy comes in the experiences that occur while we're in creation. Some of them funny, some of them sad, some of them very sorrowful. But all of them, character building, we're stretching, we're growing, we're becoming all that we can become. And that only happens when we're in the doing of. So take a look at your self-improvement schedule, your self-improvement regimen. And just ask yourself, as I read this book, is it driving me into action or into visualization and fantasy? Is this helping me become a better person and motivating me, inspiring me, as Kevin Hall says, breathing life into me to actually go and create intangible reality? Is that what it's doing? If it's not, then we may want to take a serious look, because the work of creation is not all of those activities. It's when we're actually doing the work of creation. And when we're there, we can start to experience joy. And we're going to talk about that joy tonight, joy in the journey. We're going to focus on two areas primarily. If we have a little extra time, we'll go deeper. The very first one is fundamental. When we look at our assessments, on the right-hand side, the second measurement down is called grateful. And often grateful has a challenge, has a lot of pressure. And the pressure generally comes from a life that is not meeting an expectation. We would like life to be differently. Our mind has seen something different than what's happening. And we get to answer the questions, I wish my life were more of what? By now I thought it would be. By now I thought I would be. What are we thinking? What is creating this dissatisfaction with our life? And most of the time, not always, sometimes we're in awful circumstances. Most of the time it's because our expectations are not being met by reality. It makes it very hard to be grateful. Now we can step back and choose to be in spite of those feelings, but it would serve all of us to learn how to remove the negativity. Now that starts first by using our mind constructively in mental rehearsal so that we can receive an inspired idea and an impression, not an expectation, but an impression that will ignite our passion. Passion that when we come into the here and now, we will work tirelessly to do whatever is required to create intangible reality, that which we have seen so clearly in our mind. That's the first piece. Then we are focused in the here and now, because joy in the journey does not occur in our mind. It occurs in the here and now when we are in action. Well, let's take a look. The very first thing we're going to want to consider is, okay, what have I been given? What are my gifts? Now, this might be a little different than you might normally think, because I'm not asking you to acquiesce and give up your dreams and go, okay, I've got a house or I've got an apartment or I do have a car that runs, it's got a license, you know, insurance is paid, at least I got. This isn't the process. This process is to get really clear on that which we have been given. That includes our talents and skills and education, companions, family, jobs, skill levels in all areas, our challenges, frustrations, past failures, all of those pieces. And I want you to just hold your hands out, like if you're on the video, you can see this. I'm holding an imaginary 5-pound block of clay. So everybody just do that with me. Just hold a block of clay in front of you. Ramona's participating. This is fun. She's sitting next to me. So here we are holding this clay. This is my clay. This is what I have been given. Now, what's the likelihood that I might not like this clay? I want to be 30 pounds lighter, or I want to be 4 inches taller, or I want thicker hair, or I don't want a more shapely body, or I want to inherit money from relatives and not have to work. I want all kinds of things I do not have. Here's the risk. We don't get to choose the clay. This is the clay given to us. This is our clay. We can look over there and spend our life in resentment because of somebody else's clay, what they've been given. Or we can choose tonight, to choose this clay. This is our clay. Now, some of it can have painful memories, but this is our clay. We cannot begin to experience joy in the journey until we start in this place. This is also a great way for healing self-esteem. We choose this clay. Now we're going to take this clay and make the most of it. We're going to intentionally create the most that can be created with my clay today. I'm not going to waste one moment mourning yesterday's defeats, yesterday's aches of the heart, Og says in Scroll 5. Why should I throw good after bad? I'm going to take my clay, whatever it is, and create the most I can with it. And at the end of the day, I'm going to express gratitude for that which has been created. Now, in truth, if for the next 365 days, that's all you did was wake up in the morning, get clear about your clay, and create the most you can with your clay, what you will know is that there is a force of creation, and it will join you in this process. Because you're finally in creation. We're not in wish, we're not in hype, and a friend of mine today, Clay said, hopium, hype and hopium. We're not in hype and hopium. We're not in resentment and resistance and frustration. We're in creation. The force of creation, that power, this is what it does. It's going to partner with us. And as we fully maximize our clay, something miraculous happens. We're given more clay. We're given more clay. But no one is going to give you more gifts if we don't honor the very gifts we've been given. If we resent them and we're bitter because of them, why would the giver ever give us more? Great question to ask. So gratitude is in several layers. One, here's my clay. I express gratitude for the gift. What I do with it expresses gratitude to the giver of that gift. And as I create with it, I am honoring the giver of the gift. And I am honored in return. Kind of a nice thing. Now, 365 days from now, I've been going through this process of waking up and taking my clay each day, creating the most I can with it. I might even intentionally, mentally rehearse possibilities of what could be created with this clay and get an inspired idea that will drive my creation, my effort, my focus, my discipline. It'll drive it to create the most I can. I'll work tirelessly throughout the day to create it with excitement. At the end of the day, I get to rest. Now, 365 days, if I've done this, what I do know is this. It's as good as it could be, no matter what it is. Now, in today's economy, that's a tough pill to swallow. It's a tough pill to swallow. Tough for all of us to swallow. Things aren't like they used to be for any of us. But every day that we wake up in resentment and frustration and overwhelm, and we spend time over there in that dark dungeon of despair and discouragement, is a day that we're not in creation. And every day that we're not honoring that gift, we're not being given more clay, we're not being assisted in the creation process. At the end of the year, if we're using 365 days as an example, we do not know whether it's as much as could have been created. Now we get to look back and have resentment. Og talks about Scroll 5. We will be mourning yesterday's defeats. And he says, why throw good after bad? Why waste another day in despair and discouragement? Do as much as you can with the clay in partnership with that power. And rejoice in what happens. find joy in that journey. Because that is the journey. That's the journey. The rest of it's just craziness. This is the journey. My clay, what I do with it each day, that's the journey. Those around me, how I assist them in taking their clay and building more with it. That's life. At its finest level. So when we think about gratitude, let us make the conscious decision tonight that if we're going to go into our mind and vividly visualize, let's first get clear what we have to work with. Then let's visualize what could be created with this. But I want $1 million a month. Well, so? Sorry. So? So what? Can you build $1 million a month with this clay? Don't resent it. Don't want to be somebody else. Why don't you take this clay? Because what happens if it generates $100,000, $200,000, $300,000? Is that not considerably more than where you might be today? Let us focus on taking what is and making it better and not spend time resenting what isn't. And we'll never be so long as we stay in resentment. That's gratitude. So everybody can grasp that concept tonight. Now, I was doing a session this morning for this amazing woman, Carmela Phillips, distributor in the network marketing world. And she had her team on the phone, about 40 people, and we were talking to them this morning about some of these principles. And we got done, and she kind of smiled. You could hear her smiling as she was talking. She said, "Whew, this wasn't a feel-good session, was it, Dave?" I had to chuckle, and I said, "No, it's not a feel-good session. This isn't about wanting a person to feel good. This is about a person creating something magnificent with their life. This isn't about having a seat around a campfire and seeing kumbaya. This is about taking our clay and making the most out of it and creating something magnificent. That's what this is about. Intentional creation. It's not about being unkind, but it's about being deadly real. Getting to the real issues. And then consciously choosing to take these principles and create, intentionally create. Many of us have spent far too long dreaming, thinking, wishing, hoping, wanting someone else to do the work for us. That's going to sound like an indictment. I don't want to offend us all. It's just for all of us to look at, myself included. So that we can find a strength inside of our gut that is so deep down inside of there, sometimes we can dig it out and become in the fibers of our being an intentional creator. That's our purpose. So there's gratitude. The next topic tonight, and this is a source of great joy. I've told this story to some of you before, and I'll share it again for those of you here visiting with us for the first night. And I asked Ramona if I could share some of the most recent stories. some of them you just can't share because they're a little private, but so fun. Some of the greatest joy in the journey comes when we're sharing it with a committed companion. A committed companion. I'd like to spend a little time with you tonight and talk about this. This is a tough one. You may not be in a committed companionship, so let's talk about it also in terms of you finding one and getting into that kind of a relationship. If you're in a relationship that's harmful, even abusive, if it's abusive, what I'm going to share with you tonight doesn't count. These aren't to be applied to you, these principles. Excuse me. It's important that you get assistance. Get assistance from a qualified therapist. Therapy isn't saying something's wrong. It's saying I need some assistance. Or a law enforcement. But don't stay in an abusive situation, emotional or physical abusive situation, I've coached with too many who have come out of those kinds of situations. Even after therapeutic assistance, it's been very painful for them to really re-engage in life because someone has demeaned them for so long, so difficult on self-esteem. May we love you enough tonight. May you feel loved enough to be able to have the courage to seek assistance. Now, if you're not in a situation like that and you're in a companionship, it is time for us to turn that companionship into a partnership. A partnership is very, very simple. It's two people who are 100% committed to one another in every way. As a result, trust abounds, and that trust creates intimacy. Intimacy is the ultimate expression of commitment and trust. In that kind of a relationship, there is a tenderness and a sweetness. There is a joy that sometimes you can wake up in the middle of the night and just watch someone sleep and just feel this wonderful, warm feeling. Now, a companionship is a bilateral process. It takes two people. And you may be listening tonight and may have a companion who's not and may not share all of these principles. But let's do our very best tonight to cover a few of these pieces. Piece number one, let's talk about this commitment. It is very common in our society not to be committed, to have intimacy without commitment. I'm not here to judge. This isn't a religious discussion. I just know there's a fair amount of sadness usually in those relationships and very little trust. The commitment is saying, very literally, you're it. You're it. I choose you for my life on this planet. You. I don't want to look at another person. In my case, another woman. I don't want to think about being with another woman. I don't want to think about what I might be missing out on. And I certainly won't spend any time viewing salacious images like pornography that objectify the beauty of a human being and turn them into an object of satisfaction. That's not a religious issue. That's just, can we see the value in a human being and honor them and treasure them? 100% commitment. No trap doors. No back doors. No safety nets. This is it. Everything about what I'm going to do, working, relaxing, it's going to be about being with you, serving you, lifting you, building you. With this commitment comes a couple of things. One is an emotional commitment. An emotional commitment sounds like this. I will always look for the good. Always. When someone's down, I will help them see what's good. When somebody does something that frustrates me, I'll just bite my tongue. Not with an agenda, I'll get back to them later, or passive-aggressive, just let it go. What good will there be in voicing those opinions? I believe human beings know. They just know. When we do couples retreats, it's so fun. We had side-by-side UTVs, Razors and Rangers, and we would have the wives drive first, and we would have the companions, and the guy would sit next to him and to her and hang on to what they called an OS bar. You can guess what that stands for. That's really what they called it. Hang on to the OS bar. And off we'd go. And the women would drive for the first half of the day. And we'd go on some pretty daring trails, some fun ones, some big rocks we had to work our way through and steep areas. And we gave them instructions for the entire morning, husband. All you can do is compliment your wife for how well she's driving. She hits a rock, don't say anything. Why not? Well, don't you think she knows she just hit a rock? Can you see it? You hit a rock. And someone says, you just hit a rock. And having the person go, oh, is that what that was? You know, I thought it was an old tire or something. We know. We just know. We don't need someone to tell us what we just did. So we ask them to look for something good and be complimenting. So we watch sometimes men struggling to say, sweetheart, you handled that really well. You went through that really, you did a good job. And struggling, trying to reach, because we're not often conditioned in these companionships to be looking for the good. It's really sad when I watch a couple bitter, sniping at each other like they're fifth graders. I don't know that there's ever a justification in a committed relationship for two people to ever raise their voice. Ever. Somebody say, how is that possible? Well, if somebody needs to be right, we talked about this in our last quality. I mean, somebody has to be wrong. If 9.5 out of 10 people have their self-worth tied to their idea, and we point out flaws in their idea, we are pointing out flaws in their worth, and we are crushing them. What topic would justify us crushing our loving companion? What could it be? Somebody might say, well, they just crashed the car. I think they're feeling already. What happens if we just hold them? It's okay, it's just a car. It's our only car! What are we going to do now? It's just a car. It's just a car. 10 years from now, you'll hardly remember, except for the hug. What happened? I share that with you. It's dangerous. Because I know some people tell me that if they don't fight, they're really not being honest with each other. And I say, BS. Somebody needs to be right, and that makes somebody else wrong, and somebody needs to get crushed, and somebody needs to be hurt so that we can make up. How about if we spend that energy lifting and building, listening to an idea, finding good in that idea? Because a committed partnership, by its very definition, partnership, equal, severally liable, severably committed to making it work, which means each partner's responsible for 100% of the partnership. That's how partnership works legally. So we're showing up, lifting and building. Let us this week, if we're in a committed partnership and we find that time when we want to say something, let us consciously step back, see the value of that person that we deeply love. What could we do at this point to lift them and build them? But I'm feeling angry. So? Can we see our partner? This is a sensitive topic. I can almost feel the energy coming through the phone as we talk about this. This won't happen overnight for some. Some are blessed with thought processes where both companions need to be right about everything, and that can get really complex. But let us make the choice this week to be kinder and gentler. Just let things go. Just let them go. See what happens. And spend all the energy we spent in anger in looking for what's important. That's an emotional commitment. Financially, in a committed companion, decisions are made bilaterally. Now, in our world, sometimes that doesn't happen that way. In a man and a woman relationship, the man often takes responsibility for those decisions and makes them by himself, and what a tragedy. I know those decisions in which I consult Ramona turn out much better than my own. It's wonderful to have a companion consult with and just have a place and say, are you okay with this? And if they say no, we're not going to spend the rest of the evening trying to convince them why we're right. We honor their opinion. They feel so valued, so important. The benefits that will come from that will outweigh anything you ever wanted to buy. Anything you ever wanted to buy. So financially, decisions are made together. They're just made together. Money is shared together. It's very dangerous when a man takes a check, puts it in a bank account, and pays an allowance to a wife. She feels like she's a fifth grader. And if she needs more money, she has to come and ask the lord of the house for a few more dollars to pay the bills. What happened to the last dollars I gave you? Good grief, I've given you $800 this month. While this person often out going buying a new pair of shoes and a new bowling ball and a new gun and new wheels for the truck. And, you know, we got to be very careful about this, that decisions financially are made as a partnership. Now, if there's a challenge here, you might sit down and visit about this. You might find out what it's like for a companion if you're the one in charge of the funds and have been withholding. What would it be like if you shared a bank account? If everything was known. And either one of you could make decisions to a certain point without consulting the other. So financially. Spiritually, this is a touchy one. Sometimes we don't share the same belief systems. It's important that if you do not, to define areas where there is commonality. Some questions that might be explored. Do you believe there's a power greater than yourself? Yes or no? If both parties say yes, there's commonality. What is your name for that power? You might have different names. Third is, what is its purpose? What's its purpose? Discuss it. Explore it. It's to bless people's lives. Okay, we agree on that. Isn't that wonderful? You find points of agreement so that when you're talking about spiritual things, you can do it from a position of strength and unity. So spiritually. Physically, I've talked about briefly. Physically, it's very interesting. Ramona and I are turning 58. She turned 58 last week. I turn 58 tomorrow. We're doing Insanity. Is that what it's called, sweetheart? From Team Beachbody. All these people have beach bodies, and I certainly don't have one, and Ramona's so patient with me as we're going through the workouts. We're going to take the best care we can of our physical body. But with age, things will happen. With the birth of children, things will happen. They just do. But if we're totally committed physically to one another, those things really don't matter. All of our passion, all of our desires, are directed to that person. This is a great thing to do, because what actually happens is that person becomes increasingly beautiful, as time goes on. And relationships can be very beautiful, no matter what the age. And sometimes I've seen relationships where they became very ugly at a relatively young age and robbed each other of such tenderness for years. Physically, that's it. All of my passion. Can you imagine that? Ask yourself tonight, am I ready to make this commitment? Have I made it already? If you have, beautiful. If you haven't, oh my goodness. Ah. Here's a promise. A promise. Sometimes we don't make it because we're afraid we might miss something. The truth is that in not making the commitment, you miss the very thing you've been looking for by not making it. When you make the commitment, you get to walk down a hallway and open a door. Seems restrictive at first, but when you open the door, you walk out into a world that only those who make the commitment know about. It is such a tender, wonderful, precious place. It leads us from commitment directly. directly to trust. What is the basis of trust? The basis of trust is 100% commitment. There can be no doubt when there is, and it's expressed and known, there's 100% commitment. Now, trust is also based on some other things. Stephen M. R. Covey, in his book, Speed of Trust, tells us that trust has four pillars. Pillar number one is integrity. We're honest in all of our dealings, not only with each other, but with others, the people outside of our relationship. Two, intention. Our intention is always to lift and build our partner, always. Ability. Now, this is a touchy one, because for trust to abound, we need to be able to perform at the highest possible levels in all areas of our life. And I'm speaking primarily about providing for our families. If we do not maximize our ability, no matter how committed we are physically and emotionally and spiritually, trust is going to have a difficult time abounding, because there'll be a struggle paying bills all of the time. That creates an undermine in the pillar of trust called ability. And last is results. What have been your results? Can your spouse trust you to deliver as a mother, as a breadwinner, as a father, as a sweetheart, as a lover? We want to have results. So, integrity, our intention, our ability, and our results. That's trust. Well, when those two are present, then there's something precious that occurs called intimacy. And intimacy isn't just sexual intimacy. Intimacy sometimes is reaching out and touching someone's hand for a moment, just letting them know you're here. It might be playing with their hair. It might be just putting your arm around them. It might be the way you walk with them in public or open the door for them. It might be a note that you write. It might be a little phone call that you make. It might be going to the car and coming back into the house, either one of you, depending on who leaves first in the day, and just holding someone a little longer, just a little longer. Kissing them. I love you. I just wanted you to know that today. I love you. I really love you. It's so precious to climb in bed late at night, exhausted, just lying in bed, just going to sleep, and all of a sudden, out of the dark, I hear Ramona say, "Dave, I love you." That is about as tender as it gets. Now, those kinds of feelings can bring us to sexual intimacy. Now, guys, I want you to know that sexual intimacy does not start at 10:30 at night as we're climbing in bed. Sexual intimacy begins when we wake up in the morning and we show respect and love and kindness, something that would draw our mate to us. They want to be with us. Ladies, same thing. There's more of an emotional component to this than guys would like to talk about. The literature says we're all visual and we get an arousal and that's it. That's really not true. Not when there's a commitment involved. Not when there's trust involved. It is now expanded to something deeper and richer. And it's wonderful when we know we're loved and respected. One of the things I love about Ramona, quite frequently, she'll just pull me aside for just a moment to say, I want you to know how much I appreciate how hard you work. Just really appreciate it. And I know she does. And it just turns me on. It's okay. I think we're okay saying that. I'm daring these days. It's those kinds of things that lead up to this wonderful and playful time that a committed companion can have, free of guilt and shame, where there's an ultimate expression of love. When I was producing the films Come In From the Storm, a three-part series on child abuse prevention, we put together a nationally known group of therapists and a advisors. One of those was Ray Helfer. Ray's now left us. He's passed away. University of Michigan, one of the fathers of child abuse prevention education. Dr. Helfer specialized with young women, ages 12 to 18, and treating them, and most of them because of sexual abuse as a child. And he said, you know, Dave, it's really difficult, because I'll have a 15-year-old client come into my office and say, I need your help. Okay, share with me. I met this guy, and we've been dating now for a couple weeks, and I really, really like him. How can I show that I really like him? Can I bake him cookies? Bake him cookies. Upon further inquiry, he finds out that they had sex the first night they met. No commitment. No trust. It's interesting how intimacy has been sold as a sporting event and a great price to society. This isn't religion. This is about joy in the journey. When you wake up at 30 and you've got a sexually transmitted disease, you tried to live like they did on Friends on television, you found out it wasn't as fun after all. There are a lot of lonely and miserable times that they did not portray. And we find the sadness and the loneliness where there's a lack of commitment and trust before intimacy is experienced. We just know. It's not healthy. But oh, and it abounds. It's just a precious thing to have in your life. So, take it for what it's worth. If you're in a committed relationship, exercise commitment in all areas, emotionally, physically, financially, spiritually. Work on trust that not only is born out of commitment, but with integrity and intention, with ability and with results. And then experience the intimacy that's born out of those very feelings and commitment. This kind of love can sustain you through almost anything. I know Ramona and I have been through a couple of really challenging times. 21 years ago when we lost everything and what we had left was loaded in a couple of Ryder trucks that were heading up here to Utah. $1 million on our back and debt that needed to be paid off. 7 children. Oh my goodness. I watched an example, and I know she's uncomfortable with me sometimes sharing these things I've written about in the latest chapters of the book, because I want people to feel how it could be, so they'll strive to want to become better. Because as we were pulling away from the house, I'm bawling, and she's singing camp songs. She had the same acute pain I had, but she was being very sensitive for our very confused children. When we came to Utah and were looking for a place to live, she took her diamond ring off and said, sell this. I don't need it anymore. I'll wear my wedding ring. And we sold it and were able to get into a house. Changed our lives. We talked about this recently. My agent asked me to tell a little bit more of the story in the book. And I read the email to Ramona that Margaret had written. And I watched her lip quiver and then her chin. And then a tear freely flowed down her eye. It was an enormous sacrifice. But she never once complained. Never once, ever, ever doubted. What a gift when we are committed like this as companions. Now, I'm not going to say everything's perfect. I happened to marry somebody who was. And those of you who know me know I am far from, and we know who's paid the biggest price for us to have peace in our home. I don't want to take credit for this. I just want us to reflect tonight on what's possible and joy in the journey, because this is a huge piece of the joy. Because if this piece is in place, regardless of the firestorms of life that come, we can be sustained. We all know that Chad Wade and Justin Yates were killed in a plane accident just about a month ago, June 1st. I'd received the phone call, and while I was on the phone call receiving it, Ramona received a second phone call and took it upstairs. And she was standing at the door when I hung up the phone. She just burst into spontaneous tears. It was so tender to see. And we just held each other and sat here and talked, just being with one another at that significant loss. Some of us have had losses deeper than those in terms of personal relationships inside our families and children. Some have suffered some really difficult financial challenges lately. You can survive almost anything if this piece is in place. That's why I chose tonight to spend so much time on it. Because absent this, trying to find joy elsewhere is really difficult. Because this is the one that matters. Because when the firestorm is over, if this one's still intact, this one is still healthy, everything's fine. If the storm costs us our relationship, oh, what a tragedy. We've not only had the loss of things, we've had the loss of a companion. Now, there may be someone on the phone tonight who have been through that. I reach out to you and just want to give you a big hug. If you're in a relationship and you're struggling in your relationship because of your finances, because of a job situation, this could be the best time to pull together, to spend time listening and talking, unselfishly serving one another, a time that could really strengthen your relationships. Well, there's our two major topics for tonight. One, gratitude, taking the clay we've been given, because it's our clay. It's all we get right now. We either take this and create something magnificent with it, or we get to go, I don't want this, I don't want this, I want his, I want hers, I want this, I want that, and nothing's going to change in our life. But I want it fast. I think get to creation. Get started. Get clear on what this is and create the most you can with it. Honor the gift. Create and honor the giver of the gift. And watch what happens in your life. Two, and if you're in a relationship or want to be in one, if you've been in one and looking to get in one, do it right this time. Do it right this time. There are people who want to turn the relationship around, start with the intimacy, then be frustrated that there isn't trust and not want to be committed. It's really an interesting mess. Start with commitment. Build trust. Let the intimacy not be a sporting event, but an ultimate expression of that level of commitment. Then it's glorious. Have fun. Even in firestorms, laugh. We had something happen the other day that was kind of bitter. And we just spent time laughing, just laughing. We want to be able to laugh. Because this too shall pass. What in 10 years will not seem insignificant in the river of time? Let us not lose that which is most important over that which is just temporary. Well, when we look at joy in the journey, we can also look at finding meaning and purpose. I just want to share one thing about jobs, and then we'll be done. Many of us have jobs. Many of us wish we didn't have that job. Many of us want to have something different. Some want to fire a boss, but they don't want to apply for the job of being a boss. There's all kinds of situations. If you have a job, I'm going to encourage you to fall back in love with it. Fall back in love with it. You'll come home more energized. You'll have more energy to do other things, including maybe build another business. It's less important what we do than how we do it. Two things. One, self-esteem is often healed when we do a really good job and have a sense of accomplishment, whether we're recognized or not. So when you've decided to pay for a job, you can be receiving. Benefits can be received. Economics goes out the window. I would now bring my very best, all of my talents, all of my skills, to create the most I can with what's been given to me within the sphere of my job. Why, you might ask? They're not paying me enough to do that. Because you're learning how to be an intentional creator of your life. If you do it there, you'll do it in every other part of your life. If you don't do it there, you'll come home so exhausted you won't have the energy to do it in other parts of your life. Two, I happen to believe the cream rises to the top. It just does. I watch our oldest son, brilliant young man, homecoming queen in high school and couldn't graduate, didn't have enough credits, ended up having to get his GED. Went away on a mission for 2 years for a church, came back, got a job as a car salesman. All of a sudden there was an opening at a company that sold medical things. And he applied and got the lowest level sales position. 10 years later, he's the vice president of the East Coast of the United States. Amazing. He's gone back to school to finish his degree because he's going to kind of need it to go to the next level because it'll be a requirement. They just keep waiving it at this point. Because he pours everything he has into everything he does. It has less to do with what we do than it has to do with how we do it. Let us fall back in love with what we do. Let us focus on lifting and building people around us. When we come home, we'll still feel energized. And then you can use that energy to love your family, build another business, whatever it might be. But this is joy in the journey. Let us not be selective where we show up and how we show up. Let us be our very best everywhere we go. And lastly, let us bring our very best home with us. Because there are times when we are very good in the workplace, and we're so exhausted when we get home, those thought processes and our assessment take over. And those we love the most get the worst version of us. Let us work on being our very best there, too. Well, thank you for being with us tonight. This is Joy in the Journey. This is the doing of life. This is how we feel about our life when we're doing. How we feel about what we're doing. And the value of what we're doing. Committed relationships, gratitude, and falling back in love with everything we do, being the best we can everywhere we show up. Now, to assist us in this area, there are some scrolls that we can study. I happen to like scroll number 10. Scroll number 10 is about seeking guidance. Og talks in the scroll, who is of so little faith in a time of danger or something that's beyond our comprehension is not called out to as God. Our challenge in today's society is that our cry quite often is not being answered because we're asking to be rescued. Og tells us, let us seek for ability. Seek for ability that we may know how to create those things that we wish to have. That prayer will always be answered. Then he tells us about taking on obstacles that others have failed. Why would we want the obstacles? And I've studied that paragraph so many times, and I finally came to the conclusion, Og saying, David, you're going to get them anyway. You might as well embrace them when they come, because you're going to get them. It's part of life. Life is not like it is in the movies. There are times of difficulty and sorrow and frustration. If we know that, and we're about the journey, we'll take the good with the bad, always bringing our very best, smiling and laughing at the world, in the tough times knowing this too shall pass, and ultimately finding that joy, that purpose in our suffering, that joy in our journey, and that healing in our souls. Well, have a great week. Whatever's going on in your life, it might be really traumatic right now. Focus on the gratitude and on the committed relationship and falling back in love with what you do. And see if you can't get a smile on your face just a couple times this week. This is life.